Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this will be a series of lectures on Bhagavad Gita principles and, well, it's called management, but not management in the normal sense of the term. Of course, it applies to business management because they do teach it in the business world. But it's also applicable to people in general in their whole life, managing your own life, even if you're not a businessman. So it's quite a flexible concept. In other words, it's a explanation of the Bhagavad Gita principles, which shows how those principles are applicable to the life we lead now, materially speaking and spiritually speaking. In other words, it has some practical application. And not only for us, but even for the karmic world. The same concepts are applicable. So in terms of Bhagavad Gita, I will discuss material nature, jiva, karma, God, and devotional service. And in terms of other principles of management, there are basically 6 or 7 steps. I want to cover 6 of them, but there's actually supposed to be 7 of them. Plus 1 negative aspect of it. That's the beginning stage. So usually I take one principle and then I explain it, the Bhagavad Gita thing that kind of corresponds to it, or like something like that. They don't quite match up. So this time maybe I'll be a little flexible and maybe try to cover more of the technical stuff that first and then the Bhagavad Gita stuff second. Maybe two parts like that. To start out, in the material world, basically we have to manage something because we do have our own body to take care of, and it requires a little bit of planning to do that. So we have to manage ourselves, at least in this material world. And, of course, generally an adult person also has to take on managerial responsibilities because we do have other people to relate with and take care of usually. So usually a person grows up, then he gets educated, then he graduates, and then he has to start working. So he has to manage himself to work or to set up a business or whatever he's doing or work for somebody else. Nevertheless, you get money, you have to manage the money. And then if you've got a family, then you have to manage the family and the expenses. So there's many things you have to do in life that require management on various levels. And of course, the most important thing is you have to manage yourself. Everybody has to do that. And that we call, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna keeps saying, control your mind. You have to control your mind. Control your senses. Use your intelligence. Submit your senses to your mind, and your mind to your intelligence to the dictates of the soul. So this is management also. This is ultimately what we're getting at here. That's the ultimate management. So Krishna also speaks like this. So, of course, in the past, in terms of business management, they didn't think the two things are really related. They just wanted methods of effectively getting the most production out of any system they had. So that was basically what business management was, to get the best production out. And then they thought, well, the best way to do it is we have to be very effective in terms of, you know, cutting costs and having effective systems in place and not wasting time, you know, and setting out nice schedules, time efficiency, energy efficiency, and things like that. So they concentrated a lot on the technical aspects of, you know, doing things efficiently. And then, of course, they also had processes. You have a process and make the most efficient process and then set it up so that it's followed. So you have a hierarchy for making things happen. You know, so you have a management structure and then you have various things you do, management techniques, etc., to increase production and keep it going. So the technical things were the matter at one stage. However, business management itself has undergone some sort of, you know, evolution, so to speak, in the last 50 years, from the very first exploitate. Of course, that was the original thing, Industrial Revolution. Let's exploit everybody. And if we got money in the business, then we exploit all the people that don't have the money. We make them work hard, and we get the profits. So basically, it's exploitative. That's the first method. The second method is, let's be efficient at doing that. We're very efficient and, you know, save time and money and everything like that. Have machines, whatever. So efficiency became a big thing. However, some people have observed that companies can do that and they can succeed. When you have a nice, intelligent person at the head, you can succeed for some time in the business world like this. But they've also noted that usually those companies which are in the top 100, they don't stay that in that position for more than 10 years, and then they drop back. And they crack up or something like that. So it's not a permanent thing. There's some problem there. So the problem must be, we must trace it back to something in their managerial conception, something wrong there. So efficiency itself and structures themselves are not the only thing involved in efficiently keeping a company going. First getting it started, putting it on top, and then keeping it going on top. Yeah, there's something wrong there. So then everyone began thinking, you know, managers, and I guess they did some universities and everything, they began thinking what actually is the problem. So then finally, after examining things very closely, then they realized that actually the people who work in the company, they're people actually. They're not objects. You cannot treat them like objects and, you know, make mathematical calculations on objects. They're actually people. So you have to treat them as people. That was a big realization. And that the people are your laborers or your workers. They are your assets, so to speak. Yeah? And it's through them that you get your product. And it's through them you get your profit. So there has to be an effective way of handling those people apart from, financial and efficiency calculations, how much it costs to keep that person here, and how much produce you can give, and how much he's working, and these are the, you know, the figures. But apart from that, didn't seem to work out because usually the companies, they start breaking up after a while. So then they had this idea that now we have to look at the people and see how are we going to keep the people in a company and make them loyal. And how are they going to be productive in the company and be enthusiastic to be sit in the company and contribute to it in a very, very genuine way? Yeah? Because that's the only way the company will hold together for long periods of time, where you get groups of people who are enthusiastic and loyal. Yeah? So, therefore, they began to investigate this whole idea about people. And through that, they evolved a new type of business management philosophy, so to speak, based on the individual, development of the individual person. So in this type of management, the individuals from top to bottom are given, we can say, equal respect as individuals, and the company or the managers and the directors, they have to encourage the individuals to develop themselves, develop their character, to develop their qualities as a mature individual, as a mature adult human being. So, of course, what does that mean? That means ultimately they have to, at least they're trying to cultivate higher character, which means sattva quality and ultimately spiritual quality. And that's what it ultimately means. So, therefore, business management kind of turns around towards a more ethical and spiritual goal, ultimately. And this is the modern philosophy. Because the company is made out of the people, and you have to treat the people according to their needs. And their needs is that they have to develop as spirit soul, not as a body. And so out of this, a whole new concept came. So in this, first we start the negative stage, I'm saying. Let's explain that. That is that we're in the material world, and we have to, before we can manage anything, we have to manage ourselves. If we cannot manage ourselves, don't hope to manage anybody else. If you can't control yourself, you're not going to control anybody else. Not very long anyway, unless you do it by force. Huh? So it's based on first cultivating yourself, and that's called the private victory or internal victory, where you master yourself. After you've done that, then you concentrate on extending yourself into relationships with other people. Huh? And through that, we have what is called the public victory, an external victory. Okay? So you can't have the external before you have the internal. You can't have the public victory or manage other people unless you can manage yourself first. Huh? So that's the basic principle here. Huh? Which means that it's based on character values. And when you've developed your character properly and manage yourself properly, then you're qualified to manage other people. But until you've done that, it's not going to work. All you can use is force. And force doesn't work, ultimately. You can work for some time, and you can pay people also to work for you for some time. But it's not going to be long-lasting. And that's why the companies keep breaking up. Because they'll give money, they'll get everything. But nobody is satisfied. Because they're not developing, so they all leave the company, and company will crash. So it's all based upon developing the self first, and then extending yourself and relating to other people. So relationships with other people are not effective and lasting and authoritative unless first you've mastered yourself. So that's the basic idea. So before that, before mastering ourselves, we're in the material world, and most people in the material world are actually not in control of themselves, even. Sometimes we say everyone's under control of karma. That's so in one sense. You don't have to be. But this is what happens. People just fall under the control of karma. And they don't make any choices, any intelligent choices. They make choices because as human beings we have to make choices, and we're responsible for them. But they don't think about the choices. They just do them automatically according to the karmic situations that arise. So they're not really using their free will intelligently. And this is what, you know, Krishna says, you know, Prakriti is doing everything. For the unintelligent person, yes, Prakriti is doing everything. You're put in a corner and you react in a predictable way according to the modes of nature, and you get karma as a result. So in the material world, this is what happens. So this is called the life of dependence, in which we don't use proper intelligence. But we don't make proper decisions based upon intelligence and wisdom. Or rather, we make our decisions based upon emotions and immediate like and dislike, anger, hatred, envy, greed. And we simply react to any situation like this. That's under the modes of nature. This is where we really fall into karma. And everything is predictable in our life by karma. So this is the life of dependence. We're dependent in everything. We may think we're independent, and we like to immediately react to a situation, and we think I'm doing it, but actually we are dependent in all aspects of our life here. For our happiness, we are dependent outside. If I want to be happy, then I have to get something outside here. I can't be happy just doing nothing. I got to get something from the world. So my happiness is dependent upon the outside world. My contentment is dependent on that. Now the problem is you don't always get everything in the outside world. Even if you try, cannot get it all. So therefore you end up having a, you know, happiness and distress in a situation. So we have a life of dependence dependent on the outside world. And if it's nice out, then we're happy. And if it's not good, the surroundings are not good, and we don't get what we want, then we're miserable. So our happiness is dependent upon the circumstances around us, and those circumstances are unpredictable, and they always keep changing. So therefore, we're going to go up and down like this all the time. The situation never stays the same. It's always changing. The world's always changing, and you're always moving around in the world, different circumstances. And they're not always going to be happy circumstances. So therefore, we're going to fluctuate all the time. Happiness and distress, happiness and distress, happiness and distress. And we don't like that. So therefore we become disturbed. So this is the nature of the material world. And most people, this is what they do. They live in this world where they're simply going from happiness to distress based upon the outside world. And it's not a very healthy situation. It's very unstable. So we have to get out of that situation. First stage is called being proactive. This is the opposite of reactive. When something happens, we react to something. I like it or I dislike it. I hate it or I like it. And that doesn't come from thought. It comes from spontaneous feelings. We have spontaneous feelings about any situation, good or bad, like or dislike. That's a reaction. And then based off on that, we do something. We have a reaction, and then based on the reaction, we do some activity. And I don't like this person. And then we do something. We can hit the person. We can go away from the person and do so many things. We can call them bad names or whatever. Do anything. So we can. We have a reaction, and then we have activity. Sometimes we cannot do the activity. There's no possibility. But at least we have the reaction. And then we may have an activity depending on the situation. So that's reactive. So we have to fall out of that type of habit, and we have to become proactive. That means our responses to the situation are not based upon immediate emotional reactions. The responses are based upon principles that we live by. In other words, and then our actions are based upon those principles also. So it's not that I like or dislike. It's not based on that. It's based upon the principles you have. So we could say that it's a reaction of sorts, but it's a more meditative reaction based upon some deeper principles. And along with this comes the idea of responsibility. Because we do act in this material world, we also have to be responsible for the results of those acts. Responsibility means the ability to respond is responsibility. Though we don't usually use it in that sense, but that's actually the basis of responsibility is to respond correctly to the situation, and then when we do act, we'll act properly so we won't get bad results. So if we act proactively, we're proactive, then our response is proper. And then we do an activity, then the result is in no way unfavorable to us. But if we don't do that, then we're going to get a lot of negative reactions ultimately. So we always have to be aware that the response and the activity that we do brings about some results, and we are responsible for those results, not somebody else. We can't blame somebody else for that. So in other words, we can't blame other people for our situations in life because we create our situations. So we cannot blame other people for this. And we can't blame karma either, because we are the generator of karma. So if we want to blame somebody, we have to blame ourselves ultimately for our situation in this world. Where I'm at now, where I was before, where I'll be in the future. It's all me. It's nothing, you can't, it doesn't say karma did it. Somebody's doing the karma, and that's us. We're doing the karma. So we have to become responsible and realize that our activities give results for ourselves, and that's what we are. This is the result of my past activities. This is where I'm at now. And that's the sum total of all my past activities, concentrated in this moment now where I'm existing. And who did it? I did it. I'm the responsible person that made this what I am now. So what this does, of course, responsibility is a big thing because you have to work. You have to accept the blame. But the good thing is that it allows you to set your goal. If I'm responsible for the results, then I choose and I can attain something. That is my effort. I make my goal, I work, I achieve my goal, so I did it. That's responsibility. The negative side, of course, is that if you're lazy, is that you have to suffer the results of your activity. If you do bad activities, you suffer a lot. This is karma. This is the first principle. That is, we have to become responsible, realize that we create our future, and we have to accept the results of our own activities. And therefore, we have to judge very carefully which activities to do in any circumstance. Very, very necessary. So this is proactivity. This is what we call proactivity. So that's the first principle. We have to become responsible. I'll go over this again in detail. I'll go over everything, and then I'll go back onto this one point again. The next point is, now that if we develop responsibility and use our free will properly by deciding according to intelligence, not according to emotion, we've got that principle, then we can set our goal. But then we have to set a goal. That's the second thing. Second thing, you have to have a goal. If there's no goal, you don't go anywhere. Materially or spiritually. That is why in spiritual life we have sambandha, abhijaya, and prayojana. Yeah, prayojana is the goal. If you don't have a goal, sometimes I used to wonder, what's the prayojana for? Because, you know, we got the process of bhakti, but bhakti has to have an end. You know, we have to have some incentive about where we're going. Is the end result. Otherwise, what is the inspiration? So in the material world also, you need a goal. You want to achieve something. And if you don't have a goal, you're not going to get there, are you? You don't automatically achieve something unless you understand where you're going. So in the material world, you need a specific goal also. And spiritually also, we need a specific goal. So we have our goal of Krishna prema, and that's defined as absolute surrender to Krishna unconditionally. In which state we associate with Krishna and we get pure bliss. That is the goal. So in the material world, one can have many different goals. Companies will have their goals of how much money they're going to make, etc. Whatever. So goals are there. Material goals are there. But you cannot separate the material goals from ethical and spiritual goals also. Cannot be separated. Because the first principle here, the proactivity, is we have to act according to principles. Well, where do the principles come from? What are those principles? Those principles should be eternal principles that don't change. And they should come from deep inside. In other words, we're not going to act on principles unless they're very, very strong. So what are the strongest principles? The strongest principles are the things that emanate from the soul. Those are the most permanent things. If it's flickering in the mind, they can change every day. Moral principles held in the mind will change. They'll change according to whether you're getting your sense gratification or not. And they'll bend like this according to whether you're getting what you want or not. That's what happens in the material world, see it? You see, like the American government, all governments, I guess, but American government is a good example. With, we have all these people in power in American government, and you know, they're telling the law, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't cheat, you can't lie, do this, do that, don't steal, don't, you know. But then publicly everybody's stealing and cheating. Yeah, they can't help it. Temptation is too great. They got so much to risk, so they want to take, they have to get when they're in power, and they have to take everything. Yeah? Nevertheless, of course, they do believe the they believe and want intellectually the principles, but they cannot follow them because their emotions are stronger. So those principles don't hold up properly. So the principle has to come from a deeper level, not just you know, something you read in a book and something that's in the law. It has to come from inside, very, very deep. In other words, it comes from the soul. So those principles are in the soul. And so that has to be part of the goal. The goal has to include not only your material things. You know, I want to establish myself firmly in this material world and have enough money to support my family. Okay, that's an honest goal. Huh? Support my family, and they should get them educated and care for everybody so that they can, you know, be responsible citizens. That's the goal. Nothing wrong with that. But apart from that, then you have to have something that's materialistic. That's a material goal. You have to have your own personal goal in life. What am I supposed to achieve in this body from birth to death? You can have your material goals, money, family, this and that and that, but you can't take those with you once you're gone. They're all gone. And only that's left after you is your soul and your subtle body. So something has to develop between your birth and your death in terms of your soul and your subtle body, not just the material things. What is that? What is it you want to develop mentally and spiritually by the time you've gone out of your body? There should be a goal there also. So of course we can think about that, and obviously we'll understand that it's going to be something at least up to sattva-gun. We're trying to achieve something in terms of let's say compassion or doing good for other people or something. At least that far we have to get. And of course, spiritually, we can go higher than that. Huh? There's a story that this one person, Stephen Covey, tells us one, or an exercise actually. You imagine yourself that you died. Yeah. Okay, you're dead now. You're lying there dead. Okay, but of course, we know that you can always be separate there in your subtle body and the soul that can be standing there separate. And you can see your body there. So you can just imagine yourself, you're dead, you're separated from your body, and you're outside there in your subtle body with your soul, and you can observe everybody there. Your dead body is there, all your friends are there. Yeah? So your friends are having their funeral ceremony, whatever. And of course, at all these times, everyone is supposed to praise you, yeah, for all your wonderful qualities. You know, this person was so nice because this. Okay. So now all your friends are there. Now, what are they going to say about you when you're dying? And what's going to please you? Actually, what they say. Now, what are they going to say? This man was my friend was so rich. He had all these cars. He had a very nice house. But would you be pleased with that? Actually, because you can't even take it with you. It's gone now. You finished your body. So what would be pleasing to you?
Honorable.
Honorable. Okay. Anything else? There's no set answer. You know, this is sutta. Okay. Yeah, he was an honorable man. He was an honest man. Huh? He lived by principles of honesty. What else? Something would satisfy you after you're dead.
Compassionate,
yeah. He was very considerate of other people. Huh? Considerate, and he helped people a lot. He was, you know, he wasn't thinking of himself all the time. He was trying to help other people also. Yeah. Anything else?
He opened
up the hospital. Yeah, okay. Compassion again. Compassion, yeah. Anything else? Yeah. Anyway, you get the idea that, in other words, after you die, you would be interested less in the material things and more in the, let's say, the character, positive character traits. That much you would value. But you wouldn't value the material things. Everyone praises you for how much money you made in your life. It would be worth nothing after you're dead. Huh? So therefore, in this life itself, we have to make a goal to achieve something. Because if we don't, we don't get there. Of course, if we have some sort of idea, vague idea, we get something. But it'll be vague also. The result will also be vague. But it doesn't have to be like that. Huh? If we are more precise in our goals, then it's likely that we can also achieve a more precise result. We can get something much more. In other words, if we utilize our capacity or our potential, we can achieve much more in our life than otherwise, yeah? More than we're usually doing. So therefore, a goal is necessary, yeah? In the material world, material goals are necessary. If a company does not have a goal, it's also not going to go anywhere. And spiritually also, if you don't have a goal, you don't get anywhere. Therefore, we have prayojana. And mentally, also you have to have a goal. So we have to set goals up, and material goals, yes, we have to set material goals also because we're living in the material world. At least you have to make the goal that until I'm old, I'll have a healthy body and I won't get sick. At least that's a good goal to have. At least that much in terms of material things. And of course, if you're a family member, then a family person, then you want to set up your family so that they can, you know, survive in, you know, moderate material needs satisfied. Material goals necessary. And then, of course, the mental and spiritual goals are also necessary in life. Mental necessary, yes, because we have to live with other people in this material world, and we have to have good qualities. And of course, the basis of everything is the soul, ultimately. And if we neglect the soul, then and we just go from the material and the mental, and we neglect the soul, that's also incomplete. So the soul also has to be included. So goals have to be set. That's the second. First is the responsibility and the proactive use of free will. Second is goals have to be set. And that's our decision. We have free will. We have intelligence. And then we have to set the goal so we can attain it. So that's the second principle, setting goals. And once you set the goal, it's not enough to set a goal and forget about it. That does not work. You have to set the goal, and you have to keep reminding yourself of it every day of your life, every day of your life. But the thing is that when you do, you will keep changing the goal and start refining it. It may start out vague, but as you go on, then you'll become more specific and modify according to your experiences, because we are human beings and we evolve in our intelligence, our realization, experience. So as you go on, then you modify that goal and make it more exact and more specific and more meaningful to you as you go on. But nevertheless, it has to be repeated. And that is why Krishna says, you control the mind, how? By repetition. Abhyasena tu kaunteya. By practice. And by practice, you can, you know, imprint in your mind. And once it's imprinted there, then you know, it can become real. So that's the second thing. I'll explain more about that. Some interesting points come up with that also. Mental worlds and physical worlds and how they relate to each other, how they influence each other. And then the third point is that once you keep getting your goal, you have to make time. You have to put priorities on things and give time for the most important things. And the most important thing, of course, is to keep the goal in mind. So you have to set time aside for that goal, how to develop that goal, how to keep it in mind, how to modify it. Energy has to go into this. And that's the most important thing in life. Your goal is the most important thing in life, yeah? Not the process, but the goal. So therefore, you have to put energy into defining the goal and finding means of achieving the goal. That you have to put into operation. We have to do many things in life, because some of the things aren't directly related to that goal. We have to do those things, but we shouldn't be sidetracked by all those different things. So what happens usually in the material world, we get sidetracked, and instead of making the priority the long-term goal, which is that's what a leader does. He sets up the long-term goal and keeps that in mind and keeps pushing other people with that long-term goal in mind. That's his job. The manager is simply to do the practical things. But the leader was the one who has to make the goals, fix those goals, and find ways of achieving those things, the long-term things. Generally what happens is we don't have a long-term goal, we don't think about it then, and so we busy ourselves with the mechanical things only. And but then the problem is we're busy with all the things without a goal. So it's not very effective because we waste a lot of time just going around in circles. and not going straight for the goal. Huh? So therefore, we have to make time, put the goal as a priority in our life. And that's the third step. So once we do that, then that is called mastery of the self. That's the internal victory. We use our free will, we set our goals, we achieve our goals. And when we do that, we're no longer dependent upon the outside world for our happiness. Because we're satisfied with what we're doing. And we have our own standards from inside. So therefore, we're no longer dependent on the outside for happiness and distress. The happiness will come from within. And even the situation is distressful on the outside, it doesn't really matter to us anymore. So such a person is called independent. He is independent in that stage. He is not dependent any longer on the material world for his happiness. And he can set up his goals in life and achieve those goals, and he gets satisfaction from that. That is independence. So once a person has reached that stage, then he is ready to interact with other people effectively. If he hasn't reached this stage, then he cannot really interact with other people, you know, in a positive way. There's going to be problems along the way. Next stage, therefore, is interaction with others. So if one is developed in this way, being independent, then in interacting with others, we will not feel that we have to control everybody and exploit everybody. In other words, relationship with people can be conflict, if we want it to be a conflict. Victory and defeat. I win, you lose. This is the normal situation in a relationship. I win, you lose. So, a person who has independence, he has no longer need to think of that. Rather, he thinks everybody can, both of us can benefit. That's called win-win solution, or win-win relationship, where mutual parties get benefit. This operates like in business world, where we have, you have yourself and you have your customer. So, the win-lose solution is I'll take all the money from the customer and give them a bad product. Because I make more money that way. Cheap product, I sell it, sell off as fast as I can, and therefore I get my money. That's a win-lose solution. So the customer loses because he gets something it's not worth, and then you get the money. You say, yeah, I win. So it's win-lose. So, of course, that's also short-term because the customers won't buy your products again because you get a bad reputation. So it's a short-term win, but long-term lose. So it's not intelligent. So better to think, of course, is win-win. That I should make some money, but I should also get something beneficial. Worth this money to the customer so they're satisfied. Yes, I should make my money because I'm putting some effort into it, but they should get something which is beneficial for them also. It's worth their money. So that's a win-win relationship. So we're not trying to rip everyone off in the material world this way. That's some business stuff. Then a personal relationship also operates. Often, we have conflict and then we try to win and we try to defeat the other person. I'm right, you're wrong. This is the, thing. And based on ego, of course. So it's not so beneficial to think in that mode. We may be right, they may be wrong, yes, but it's not the proper mode to think in that I have to win all the time. Better is to think that in relationships that everyone should benefit and win-win. Everybody's right in one sense. Everybody has their own independence, everybody has the right of their own opinion, whatever. So we're not trying to defeat everybody in relationships, but we're trying to see mutual advantage for everybody. Mutual respect also. So this is the one principle in interrelationships. Management involves relationships with people. So in a company, then the managers have relationships with the workers. So in the old system, it was win-lose. We have to get as much work out of these workers as possible, and we'll pay them the minimum salary and the longest hours, so we can get the cheapest product which can give the biggest profit for us. That's win-lose. So win-win in a company is that these are also people, yeah, and for long-term benefit of the company, to make them loyal, we have to treat them as respectable people, and we have to treat them as equals in one sense because they're human beings. We treat them like individuals and respond to their needs also. Yeah? And of course, the human being is such that the normal human being is that if he is given respect and is given fair salary for his work, then he'll be satisfied. Yeah? Maybe if he's given proper respect and he gets whatever he's worked for, he gets appropriate money, then he'll be satisfied. So therefore, the manager should therefore try to satisfy the workers in that way, and that they satisfy their material needs and their also their mental needs, and treat them as individuals rather than as people to exploit. And so by treating the workers as human beings and seeing to their needs as much as possible, then the workers are loyal to the company. And therefore the output is more. So therefore in the company itself, this idea of mutual benefit has to be there. The workers benefit the company, and the company gives benefit to the workers. So that is one principle interrelation. Another is understanding. First, we should understand, and then we should understand the other person. That is, in other words, in relationships, there's two people: there's me and there's somebody else. Now, generally, we think of me first. We think of the other person second. And our understanding of everything is based upon our perception of everything else. So if we're trying to communicate with other people, that's not a very good position. We have to try to understand what the other person's position is, not only our position. If we can understand the other position as well as our position, then there's hope for some sort of relationship and communication. But if we're only in our position and we're understanding that person from our point of view, it's a one-sided view of the world, we can say. So you cannot really get proper communication that way and even proper solutions to problems that way. So therefore, one has to try to understand other people from their point of view. And then incorporate that with your understanding. And then you can try to bring about solutions to problems that arise. That's the second point, seeking to understand others. And the third point is that if you have people who developed proactivity and independence in their life, in other words, they're working on principles, eternal principles, and if they come together as a group and they're interacting with mutual benefit and compassion to each other, trying to understand each other, what happens is that you get much more result than the sum of the parts. That's called synergy. 1 + 1 = 2. That's normal. So two people working should give two outputs of work, yeah? Twice as much as one. But if you have the two people are proactive with independence in their life and are acting for mutual benefit, then you will not get the same result. You'll get more results. And so instead of two outputs for two people, you may get four. Double. So the sum total of the parts is more than normal. In normal situations, it's not 1 + 1 = 2 in any of this. It's less than that. Because there's always inefficiency. So 1 + 1 may equal 1.5 maximum in terms of manpower and output. But in this way, you can actually get more output. So 1 + 1 = 5. Because there's satisfaction within the group and inspiration because of the proactivity of the members in the group and their trusting relationships, that the output will be more. So that's called synergy. So that's a sixth principle. So there's three in the first level. That is the independence, coming up from dependence, independence. And then there is a three on the next level, interdependence, from independence to interdependence, or public victory. So these are principles for an individual in life. We have to become independent, and then we have to relate to others in this material world, unless we're completely a vairagi or something in the Himalayas. We have to relate with other people in the material world. So then we have to have the public victory as well. That operates for individuals, for devotees, for anybody. And it also operates for larger organizations, companies, or anything. One has to have personal victory and personal control, and then one also has to, based on that, one can act effectively in relationships within the organization, and the organization can act effectively with outside world, other organizations or other individuals also. So these are the principles. These are the principles of effective management. Any question there so far? Now I'm going to go in detail and relate this to Bhagavad Gita. That's the next step.
I mentioned that the goal is more important than the process.
Well, yeah. If we have a process but we don't have a goal, then there's no point.
So I'm thinking somebody could say, well, the ends justify the means, and therefore, you know, anything goes as long as we achieve the goal.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean by that. Yeah, we can say that. But if you use the wrong ends, then you won't achieve that goal. You get a different goal, ultimately. Yeah? Yeah. So we can say, oh yes, I want love of Godhead. So I'll use, by hook or crook, I'll get love of Godhead. But you can't do that. Because the means that you use to do that will contradict the very goal itself, and you won't end up with the goal, ultimately. Yeah? So we have to be very careful about that. There may be extraordinary circumstances. Yeah, then they start cheating and doing whatever. Yeah, so then it defeats the purpose ultimately. We see short-term gain and long-term suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you're saying about two people working and if you have to use the girl, then normally sometimes, like the individual person, they can be there, those both are different on their own selfish and on their own interest.
Mm-hmm.
Then how can those two people can work together, because both are independent and they have their own...
Oh, two people have independence. Well, independence doesn't mean I'm not going to listen to anybody. It means that we have control of our own life. That's in sense. Independence means that we're not dependent upon our circumstances, this world, for our happiness anymore. And when it's raining out, then I can't do anything. When it's sunny out, I'll do something. You know? Huh? We are not dependent on the outside world anymore. Huh? We depend upon the principles within us for our guidance. Huh? So that doesn't mean we don't listen to other people at all. But we do have our own center of principles. And in a sense, that cannot be contaminated by outside people or... And they can't, you know, persuade us to do something else also. That's necessary. We have to stand by our own principles. Huh? But if one is got this proactivity, then you can actually relate to people without exploitation. In other words, we can work for mutual benefit. But if you're not on that level of, if you're completely dependent upon the outside world for your happiness and whatever, and dependent on other people, you're dependent on other people for happiness, like that, your relationships with other people are not going to be very pure. You know? They're going to be based upon how much I can get my happiness out of this person. That's how your relationships are going to work in the material world. Yeah. So it's a win-lose. I will use this person to get my happiness out of them. Yeah. That's what it becomes. I win, they lose. I take something from this person for my satisfaction. Whereas if one is proactive, then one has one's own principles, and one gets satisfaction within rather than from outside. Therefore, one can objectively interact with other people without, you know, gross self-interest. So there can be cooperation instead of exploitation.
So if
have spiritual, physical, and mental goals?
Yeah.
What's an example of mental goal?
Oh, as a, ethical principles and things like that, we could say.
To deal with, like, what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, okay, honesty, integrity, determination, these things. Yeah, of course, they're intimately related to spiritual things. I'm saying ultimately they emanate from the spirit soul. All the positive mental things are also from the spirit soul, ultimately. And apart from that, of course, spiritual things are also like God, etc., and prema.
There's only cooperation, no exploitation. What about competition?
Competition, well, in one sense, we can say, okay, it's healthy in one sense, because it inspires us to do better, but where our mentality is a little off, and I win, he lose, then it becomes a little bit unhealthy, because exploitation again, and then hook or crook, I have to win, and he has to lose, so then we'll try to make the other person lose instead of us, instead of both people, you know, doing good, we try to defeat the other person in the process, so... And then it ends up exploitation. It's more like, you know, exploitation, dual type relationship again. Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. In companies, sometimes they try to compete. But then what happens is really everybody distrusts everybody else in the company, because somebody has to get the job and somebody doesn't get the job, the promotion, so to speak. Yeah. And then they're all running around trying to put more, get more sales or increase their, you know, productivity or whatever, more than the other person. So in one sense, it's temporarily good for the company, but ultimately everybody distrusts everybody else in the company. So therefore, ultimately, the company will fail because there's so much distrust and enmity between the members. So it's better that they have cooperative goals and cooperative things together rather than individuals. And have rather individual winning and other ones losing, you have group prizes or group rewards rather than individual rewards. That's what they do in the company, you know.
And friendly competition is more like a group of appraisal and things like that.
Yeah.
It's nice on that. I'm not so much unhealthy competition, but how friends.
Yeah. That's okay. There's a mutual understanding there, it's okay. Yeah. As long as it's not cutthroat.
Maharaj, with the proactive approach and the long-term goal being better than the short-term goal,
Well, both have to be there, but necessarily the long-term goals, including the mental, spiritual thing, has to be there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, we're not going to go anywhere with just the material goals.
So this kind of approach, you say that it's based on cultivating and trying to develop the mode of goodness?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, it's coming to the mode of goodness. In other words, this is business management and the mode of goodness rather than the mode of passion or ignorance. Mode of ignorance is, you know, just exploit everybody and doesn't matter what happens to them. Mode of passion is, okay, we'll start trying to make our profit. Yeah. We'll give them the money, but we want to make as much profit as possible still. Yeah.
So that sometimes we may lose when we're setting ourselves projects, whether they're every day, or raising funds, or distributing prasadam, should we keep in mind the long-term goal of what we want to achieve in the situation, as well as just only looking towards perhaps numbers and...
Yeah, long-term things. Otherwise, our vision gets distorted, and our decisions will get distorted. And that's what we keep we'll forget about the long-term goal, and we'll make short-term decisions, which may be completely contradictory to the long-term goal, ultimately. So we will have better power to make decisions if we keep the long-term goals in mind.
We find we often get maybe caught up in the passion of the moment.
Yeah. And then in doing that, you may turn off everybody and get bad PR, but the whole goal is to get good PR, isn't it? and to make people favorable. But in the meantime, you make people unfavorable. So then that's a problem, you see. So the long-term goal gets compromised.
So how would you operate, say, in a business environment, for instance, when basically a business world is cutthroat?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's the problem. You try to seek out, if you're trying to act on these principles, you avoid those who are in that cutthroat mentality. Okay. And you try to deal with those people who are more in a mutual trust type of, you know, relationship like that.
Mm-hmm. Huh? But say, from... different businesses or groups, organizations, rather than.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, and they're competing with others. So how do we compete on that level? Well, as I said, in the long term, a company that acts on these processes, they survive. Mm-hmm. And the other companies that don't act like this, they collapse anyway. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time, ultimately. They may have short-term profits, but long-term they'll crash. Mm-hmm. This is the statistics, that's all. Mm-hmm. That's why we'll see the big companies, you know, like IBM and all these, they go for seminars with all this stuff, and how to develop their qualities and peacefulness, and then they have meditation seminars, and they do all this stuff, and develop your qualities, and you know, trying to get their managers to, you know, be more interactive and more compassionate, and you know, develop their qualities more. And they're really trying. Some of them are sincerely trying, these companies, to get their, you know, people to open up more and not be so, you know, self-centered.
Maharaj, in the society, of course, there's a lot of the coming, we're all affected by the modes of nature.
Yeah.
And in scripture, the teachings become humility and become compassion to all the fallen souls. So, but when you go out and work in the real world, and all these modes have to come in, goodness, passion, all the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes we have to come to the point of anger to solve the problem. Sometimes we have to come to the goodness to solve the problem. If you're always in the confessional mode and in the humble mode,
how? Oh, well, yeah. This mode does not mean that you let everybody step on you. Otherwise, definitely nothing will happen. That's the lose-win philosophy. Yeah, as opposed to the win-lose. That's the lose-win philosophy where everybody's better than me, so I'll let them take advantage of me. So that's also not a good philosophy to have, because you won't achieve anything with that either. So it definitely takes work to try to come to a win-win solution or like that. Huh? It takes more effort, definitely. But it's ultimately more satisfying if you can do that. So in other words, if one is in the sattvic mode, it is not necessary that he come down to tamasic mode to deal with tamasic people. Not necessary. It may be easier to do that. If he can hit the guy also to make him do something. But it's not a permanent solution to the problem either. So we have to work out some method of dealing with them. One way, of course, is to avoid them altogether. To avoid such people and not deal with that. That's called a no-deal situation, where we don't want to deal with the person at all. So that's also an option. Where we cannot interact with the person at all, and our principles are completely opposite of his, then better not to relate at all to those people.
So, like example, like if you are doing, there's certain things that can be done among the group.
Yeah.
Say to repair a car, for example.
Yeah.
And a couple of them are lazy.
Yeah.
They just want to drive, but you got to do it on time.
Yeah.
So instead of telling them, hey, come on, let's do everything, and some of the anger is going to come up, going to rush, no time. But instead of that, because of your compassion or humility mode, you say, never mind, I'll do it, you do it just a moment, and then the others become angry. So this, like you say, it's a loose-weak situation, so you got to something, the anger will come up to get everyone.
Situations like that. Of course, it's best that somehow we try to encourage these. Most proactive solutions try to encourage these people to become a little more responsible in their life. That's ultimately. Then they'll begin to work more and won't be so lazy. Huh? But that takes the work. That's a long term solution, yeah. Huh? But long term solutions, of course, are probably more effective ultimately. Otherwise, the problem will continue forever. They'll continue to be lazy, and you have to keep doing the work, and there's going to be, you know, friction all the time like this, and it can go on forever. Also, so then you put yourself in stress because of that. So you may get the work done, but then you stress out and you feel that, why I should do that work when they're so lazy, you know? And then you feel some sort of bad feeling towards them also. So, and then you get upset. So ultimately you don't feel happy either. So best is that, encourage them as much as possible. And if it gets too bad, then you say goodbye. Don't relate with those people. Try to find a different group instead. If there's no way of rectifying the people or putting them on a higher level of responsibility. Yeah? Generally, it's better to act with people who are on equal level. They're much more comfortable. And that's one of the rules of the material. Well, generally, like seeks out like, or attracts like, anyway. Yeah? Like attracts like. Yeah, so generally if you're on one level, you'll attract people of that similar nature to you, and you know, like that. And, you know, tamaguna, tamaguna, raja, raja, sattva, sattva. Generally, somehow Krishna arranges it like that.
In the same example, you say if the person is like, you know, who is, you know, in a low mode symptom, but you can try to work on him, but if he's still adamant, you can say bye to them. And that's the material world, it's possible. But if you're working in a special society like us, it's like everybody is working voluntarily, then how do you feel about the material?
Maybe it's in tamaguna. Tell him to live outside. It can be one of the congregation, Tamagun congregation members. generally in a cooperative society, they have to come up to a certain level. And therefore, the society should filter or screen before they let them in. Huh? Because it means society means, especially our type of society, means cooperative effort. And if they don't all contribute in terms of equal energy, then it's going to be a problem. So therefore, before they come in, you should screen them and see that they're going to come up to that level. So that is a responsibility of the society. Once they're in, of course, then if they're not up to the level, then they have to go out again. So. Well, yeah, that's why first you have to go through the personal victory before you can become a leader, basically. If you're not, then basically you won't be able to lead or manage properly. It won't work properly. Okay, now, I don't know. Should we go on or just talk here? Because next is karma. That's going to take a long time. Whole thing on karma. Maybe we'll leave tomorrow on.
Is there a separate topic for each
night? Yeah, yeah. So, we'll probably have to squeeze maybe two topics in one night sometimes. Huh? Anyway, tomorrow's karma. Oh. Because I was talking about dependence in the material world, so this is basically what to do with karma and how we get out of what karma is and how we get out of it. And how we go from dependence to independence in terms of karma and the law of karma in the material world. Like that. It's an interesting topic, and it has some pretty nice effects also.
Yeah. In the same way, we have to set a goal, and for us, actually, our goal is to surrender to Krishna. So, in that sense, actually, that goal is there, actually, right, for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, yeah, that's the goal. But the other thing about the goal, that what they do is to have, you're supposed to write down your goals, yeah? Your goals, verbalize them and write them down specifically. So when you write them down, it's not just, okay, my goal in life is Krishna Prema, liberation from the material world, pure bhakti. Just a bunch of words. It has to be something which has meaning for you. It has to be very specific also. In terms of your personal position now. So some of them may be negative, some are positive. I don't like this about myself. I have to give this up, this or that, and I want to achieve this. And some should be time specific also. Within a certain amount of time, I want to achieve this character goal or this thing like this. And this period of time, I should do this. And even in the surrender to Krishna, we should define that a little more accurately or think about what it means. What does surrender mean? What does surrender to Krishna mean, actually, in terms of my position now? What does it mean giving up? So, in other words, we should think very deeply about it, in a personal way, in terms of my own, where I am now, and what I have to achieve.
Do you apply that to, like, short-term goal and long-term goal?
Mm-hmm.
To, like, obviously, if I study, I've in my life before, insurance, so that we all have to set goals
for our business. Yeah.
So, obviously, we have one goal that we've got to set.
Yeah.
Along the way, we have like weekly goal.
Yeah.
So, like, do we have to, you know, even in spiritual life?
Yeah, some degree, yeah. I have to do that. Otherwise, again, you won't achieve the goal. Unless you got, you know, do it in segments, you know, progressive segments. That in this period of time, I want to actually achieve this. You know, like for instance, everyone keeps complaining, I can't control my mind, I can't concentrate, you know, my mind is wandering around all the time. And then the next year they come back, they have the same problem. The next year they come back with the same problem. So in other words, nobody's ever controlling their mind. Huh? But so somehow or other we have to get that determination to, you know, okay, I'll give myself 2 months or 1 week. In 1 week I should, you know, at least be able to concentrate, you know, 50% of the time when I'm chanting. At least 50%, something like that, you know, make a goal, and then when you sit down every day and chant, then you, you know, really concentrate on doing it, you know? Like that, and you set goals, the practical goals for yourself. Okay? Which is not difficult for us to do. I mean, you don't have to be too ambitious, but set something and then progress upon that. And when we achieve something, then we'll get a little more inspiration, yeah? We get a little more confidence to do more. And then we get a little fired up to do more. Yeah?
So ultimately, we can't just come in here and just do whatever is teach and then go without any ultimate.
Yeah, we have to. Yeah, of course, anything we do is good, but it's a time-consuming process. It's a gradual process. If we do that, but if we become very, you know, we can be more effective at what we're doing through our intelligence. Huh? So why not take advantage of that, and then we can go quicker also.
There was one time I talked to the devotee, and that was a long time ago, and I said, our goal is to go back to Godhead. And then he said, actually, I don't care where I go, you know, it's whatever situation, whatever Krishna put me, I'm okay.
Yeah.
So when I heard that, I thought, oh, true also. So in other words, you know, should we be like that, or should we have like a goal first, go back to Krishna,
mm-hmm.
and then along the way we work ourselves? Obviously, there are a lot of principles and rules and regulations that follow to get to that point.
Yeah.
So we work ourselves bit by bit, and have that goal.
Yeah.
Or to have that, we just...
Well, the other thing is no goal, actually. Whatever Krishna wants, that's going to happen. Well, that's no goal. We're not doing anything. We're just getting pushed around by karma.
Yeah,
that's all. We're not going to go anywhere. Yeah. Krishna says, if you want to come to me, you have to think of me. If you don't think of me, you're not going to come to me. So we have to be very specific about where our goal is.
Thank you,
but how can we better effectively get, how can we build better relationships based on positive feedback from one another to be able to help each other?
As a group cooperative. Oh, well, that's part of the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth principle. That is, seek to understand before you, you know, put it, your opinion up or whatever like that. Huh? So in other words, we should appreciate other people's position and even the differences of other people. In a group, we have to do that because everyone's an individual. So we have to learn to appreciate the differences also.
Feedback on our own action.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If it is not simply... Yeah, if it is... Yeah, if it's healthy, fine, it's good. If it's constructive, it's good.
But how can we encourage that more?
How can we encourage it? Well, I guess it depends on ourselves also, isn't it? Upon our own openness also. And if we can receive it positively, then of course people will want to do more for us also in that direction, I think. Yeah. So it depends on our own attitude to openness to that constructive advice or whatever.
In an organization, first that we have to have first the individual goal and then the organizational goal also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Individual
have to have your own individual personal goals. Well, in other words, we'll have goals in terms of individual, in terms of family, in terms of business, in terms of religion, in terms of society, social activities, recreation. You can have so many goals. Huh? All these things. And but all of them ultimately the spiritual goal is the highest and most important. Because that goes with you, nothing else goes with you. And the others can support that and should support that somehow or other. Directly or indirectly, they should all relate to that and coordinate with that final goal also.
organizational goal, everyone should be very aware of what the goal is.
Yeah. In other words, in companies, what they do is they mutually, they sit down together and they all contribute to setting the goals of the company also, even the workers. They may not have set the economic goals, but they set the goals. In other words, a company like IBM or something like that, okay, the goals, one of the goals, of course, is to make so much profit that year and whatever like that. But then they have to have other goals also in terms of, you know, how we're going to help the public, how our products are going to be beneficial to society, things like that. They'll have all sorts of other goals there. And what type of project we want to engage in, what we'll spend our profits on, how much of our profits we'll spend on, and what we're going to spend it on in terms of charities and things like that, you know. And then all the people in the, you know, the workers will also have their discussion groups, and they'll all have their opinions about what they think is the most valuable thing. And they'll take that into consideration. So in that way, the, you know, the workers as well as the top people have some sort of involvement in the company like that, and they feel, you know, they're contributing.
Let's say we have, talking about my position as a family and my business and so forth. Obviously, I want to stay involved in the spiritual growth. And if one takes up more time than the others, and I can't do one or the other, what would be the situation?
Oh, well, I think you have to be intelligent enough to somehow divide your time up. That's where your efficiency comes in. You're making time for everything. Of course, some things can be delayed sometimes. But nevertheless, we have to see what all the different portfolios and make sure each gets its due attention sometime or other. That's all. We split our time up in different, you know, try to be more time efficient, I suppose. That's all. Otherwise, cut down on the cut down on the portfolios somehow or other. No, just the portfolios maybe. Renounce a few things.
It's
good to some degree, yeah, and definitely. But as well as that, of course, is simply the principle of being proactive and learning to be independent. That's probably the most important thing of all. Okay. Hare Krishna.